You're listening to Parent Projects.
Well, the holidays are right around the corner here for Parent Projects and for our families. And as we get an opportunity to travel back to see our loved ones, it's kind of one of those opportunities where a lot of people start seeing that there's things piling up, issues that need to be dealt with. And you might even be facing some situation where you think the voice of your loved one isn't being heard the way that it needs to. Today, we've got Michelle Riddle with Complete Dignity Healthcare Advocacy, and you're going to learn how she can take a couple of very key approaches into the marketplace to help your parents' voice be heard with healthcare advocacy. So stay tuned, and here we go with Michelle Riddle.
You're listening to Parent Projects, a family media and technology group production. Now here's your host, Tony Siebers.
Hey guys, in about 2015-2016, I was in senior move management projects. Lori, I was helping some families make their ways through some pretty difficult medical situations. I'm going to imagine you've run into them and you've seen
Absolutely.
It happen. Yeah. And there are those times where the patient-centered healthcare system sometimes loses families and people get awash in that system, particularly as age sets in, technology drops on top of all of that, and the busyness of life separates us from each other. So today, we are just thrilled to have Michelle Riddle join us from Complete Dignity, an organization, a healthcare advocacy that I personally used in our practice of senior move management. Back with Senior Moves, and I'm just thrilled to have her join us today. And Michelle, how are you?
Very good. I'm very honored to be a part of your podcast live show, and very excited about educating everyone on the pitfalls and struggles and tools to help individuals navigate the healthcare industry.
Now, awesome. Because if somebody's watching this, chances are they're in a situation where they're a bit overwhelmed either by the system themselves, or they're recognizing particularly that they've got a loved one or a family member, and they've got to figure out how to even enter this thing. How do they have a right to do it? What's the right standing? Where do they go? And at what point in time do they turn to somebody like you and healthcare advocacy to step it up and help them? So thanks for joining us as we walk through that. You know, I think one of the first things I'd really love to do with you is have you talk us through how you end up in standing up a business. You're an entrepreneur, you're a founder, you're president of an organization. It's clearly been thriving over the course of the last, 7 years now. A lot of changes have happened in the marketplace. What is the story for you that helps you understand these parent projects and commit your life into a business that helps people in this situation?
So I started back in 2015, and I was actually a school nurse. I was a sub nurse for a school district, and then went full time in a high school. And I was, they're called health assistants. They're school nurses, health assistants. And I was working in that industry, and I have a pretty extensive background. My clinical hours that I worked in an acute rehab in Charlotte, North Carolina, worked on the brain injury, stroke, and spinal cord team for quite some time. And the medical industry has always been my passion. And so working as a health assistant, school nurse, my father was very ill, and I managed his care. And I used to go back and forth to his home and taking him to doctor's appointments and so forth. And my father told me I'd be a really good patient advocate. Well, I had never heard of a patient advocate. And so I was like, oh, that's super sweet, Dad. But that's not a job. So, but thank you anyways. And my dad passed away in 2013. Two years after my dad had passed, or actually almost 2 years after my dad had passed, a friend of mine had reached out and wanted to grab lunch. I hadn't seen her in a long time. I asked her what she did. She told me she was a patient advocate. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? It's a job. So I was like, you know, my dad's going, I told you so, you know. And so I went back to school. I went to Cleveland State University, went through their patient advocacy program, and got certified in patient advocacy through their program. And then I'm actually one of the first board certified patient advocates in the country. So advocacy is a somewhat of a new field. It's been around for a while, but it's really blossoming and establishing the profession in our healthcare realm, because it's a needed profession.
I was going to say that bridge between the technical, I don't know if bureaucracy is the right word from that, but it is a process, and it's a train. And if you're not on it, it's hard to jump onto it and to understand it. And somebody just to break the language down, ICD-10 mm-hmm. codes, and what's this, and how's that how does that make a difference on whether or not something pays or doesn't, or
right.
So your experiences with your dad kind of mm-hmm. set a seed, it sounds like, for you. How did you know that outside of getting some training and working through that, how did you know that you had a business, that it was something that you really knew people were going to jump on? And what kinds of people hire a patient advocate and healthcare advocate?
Anyone and everyone, because the healthcare industry is so confusing. It's so complex. And even for individuals who are in the industry, you're not going to be able to know everything surrounding the industry. So the navigation of your healthcare crisis, or your healthcare billing situation, or, you know, managing a condition, or maybe you were given a diagnosis that you've never heard of. Now, what do I do? And, yeah. You know, there's so much communication and research that is absolutely critical in basically being informed of what your options are in order to have an optimal plan to move forward, whether that's to get your bills properly processed and what your financial responsibility is, or in the managing care realm, making sure that you're actually getting the care that you need and deserve. And not, you know, Arizona just passed a amended law for the right to try. And I actually testified in front of the House of Representatives in order to get this right to try passed. And I'm happy to say it is was passed. But what Arizona has actually taken to the right to try is they individualized it. And so now they look at the DNA in order to determine what is the proper treatment for that patient based on their DNA. So when you're trying to manage your care, it's not one size fits all. You may have a lot of similarities that may fit in that lane, but it's not necessarily your lane. So it's the navigation of that.
That is okay. So honestly, I just thought healthcare was a breeze, and until the DNA thing. He said facetiously, that's crazy. It's phenomenal to watch when those things come in of technology and the application of that. But in some ways, it's absolutely amazing that we can get down to that level and understand a customization from that, and that we can find a way that the laws can actually, how that tempers in, can account for some of that stuff. On the other side, that DNA just opens up, seems like it opens up this whole other realm of hopefully or hopefully not, well, great possibility, but a lot to have to learn in a hurry. And so, so, you know, I think what would be great to do is we're going to give our listeners a quick break for a second for from our sponsors. But when we come back in, I'd like to break that down as people are moving through the ideas of what advocacy is and what they could be doing with that. You know, Lori, if you could just really help unfold that, let's unfold that onion and how people and families can walk themselves around advocacy and what its role is in their project when we return. And coming back in, today we are here at the Parent Projects Podcast. We've got Michelle Riddle of Complete Dignity. We've been going through when you stumble upon that situation, mom and dad have got a need, and you've recognized that. Now you got to figure out what advocacy and the role is. Lori, have you, you know, I don't know if you've seen this from there. What you're advising a family as senior move manager, you see that they're underwater from something like that, right? I'll let you kind of take this conversation and what that looks like for you guys and Michelle.
Yeah, you know, I think we've kind of touched on a little bit the fact that healthcare is not just one straight path. There's like 50 million tangents and bunny trails and loopholes and dictionaries all over the place with different pieces of it. So, you know, we're all about to kind of converse for the holidays and come in and meet our families and see things, which is a really awesome time to step back and sort of look. Talk to us a little bit about as we go in and we're looking or having dinner with our parents, we're sitting in front of them, we're with our siblings, and we're at a great time to observe and maybe make a plan for next year. What is the importance of advocacy maybe before a crisis hits and then as the family comes into it going forward after they come out of a crisis? How do you feel they should be looking at advocacy, and how do you feel they should be pulling that in and really embracing it and using it to help their family members?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, I think taking the holidays and the opportunity to build those relationships. I shared a while ago that individuals, especially the older population, they don't want to burden anyone with their illnesses or concerns or pains or ailments or whatnot. They want to talk about something happy. They want to talk about you. They want to talk about, you know, the grandkids. They want to talk about, you know, everything and everything that's going on in their life, but they don't want to really share what's going on in their life because they think it's a burden. So I think you need to open up the dialogue in a more, relaxed manner that is almost like you share, I share, and you share situations that is going on with you, and then they can share situations that is you know, that's going on with them. One of the things, and I sometimes I'm kind of a bull in a china store. I really ask a lot of questions I'm a sponge. I really enjoy information and knowing as much as possible about, you know, my family members or my patients or my friends. And so the one thing, and I know this may sound kind of elementary, but a red folder like this, I highly recommend is starting a red folder and, you know, what are their medications? Looking at all their medications, usually it's in a Tupperware container or it's on a shelf and you have no idea what they're taking. Is there any interactions? Do they have to take that? Are they taking too many of the same type of medication? So really opening up the dialogue, looking at all their medications and making it lighthearted. not serious, but lighthearted. Because if it becomes serious, then it's a burden. So if you're just like, oh my gosh, look at all this, and then you start writing everything down, making that list, starting the red folder, and, you know, hey, mom, hey, dad, so you're taking this medication. What is this for? Oh, they're saying something has to do with my heart, da, 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 da. So, okay, so now we're now looking at diagnosis. We're looking at, okay, we've got a heart situation, and look at the medication bottle and see who that provider is. Write down who that provider is that prescribed that medication. Then you're basically, you know, you're an investigator. You're peeling back the layers of the onion to figure out exactly what's going on with mom and dad. And now you're putting together a red folder with all that information. And so it's easy to stay on top of it and to understand, is there any mistakes? Are there any, you know, maybe the doctor has no idea that that same medication is being prescribed by another physician and they're taking double. I see it. So
it's all the time.
It does. And so if you, again, make it lighthearted, and, you know, just open up about what's going on with them and funny stories and, you know, and just, it's lighthearted, but you're getting the information that you need.
Right. And I think that people are always more receptive when it comes from a place of just caring. You know, you're not trying to boss them around. You're not trying to double check. You're not questioning what they did, but you're actually just, you just really want to know, and you want to make sure they're okay. And I'll tell you, my heart starts beating so fast when you talk about a red folder, because I'm thinking, I also do a lot of organizing and paperwork organizing, and I'm a binder freak. Yeah. So what I did for my parents as they aged was I actually made binders for them. And I had a tab that did all their prescriptions, and I had a tab that did all of their doctors, and I had a tab that did, you know, schedule and appointments and things like that. And it was helpful for me because I could oversee, and when I went to visit, I could go check on it or ask questions. It was a great conversation piece, but it helped them. Mm-hmm. And just keeping things organized and knowing where to put things. And I had a piece of paper in the front that said questions, you know, mm-hmm. and we would just kind of have a running list of questions. So I think that's a phenomenal idea and a great simple way for families to really engage and get into that advocacy role without, I tend to be like you, I'm a bull in a china shop. I just want to, mm-hmm. okay, let's go. And not everybody wants that sometimes right. you need subtler approach. And I think that's a beautiful way to ease into that and to come into a place where you're really helping them manage their care effectively. Mm-hmm. And God forbid, if something happens, you can grab that red folder and take lead if you need to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that red folder should go with you at all your doctor's appointments.
Yes.
Because again, you're trying to, you know, the key term in healthcare is patient-centered care. We hear it all the time, but patient-centered care is not necessarily happening because, you know, the patient is in the center and then you've got all these different specialists on the outside, but they're not all communicating. So if they're not communicating, then that care is not taking place for the patient. So it's individual care that's taking place, but it could be conflicting with another provider. So that's why that little red folder should go with you always.
Everywhere.
And so, you know, the provider knows exactly what's going on. And, you know, statistically, your time in the doctor's office is less than 9 minutes. And I actually think that it's definitely less than 9 minutes. I mean, 9 minutes that's a long time to be in the doctor's office because they usually don't take that long.
With the doctor.
With the doctor. But when you take that folder and what a great part of your folder is to have a list of questions. Have that list of questions prior to going to that doctor's appointment for that doctor. So if that doctor is your cardiologist, it has to do with your symptoms surrounding the heart. You know, your heart situation, your blood pressure, are you feeling nauseous? Are you feeling whatever? If you have those lists completed ahead of time, I highly recommend submitting it to your doctor prior to your appointment so that doctor has the opportunity to review your symptoms and your concerns and potentially options. Maybe you have something you'd like to try that you want to put in there. So then that less than 9 minute appointment, you've got an outline and you're going to stay on track. And you're going to get more out of your appointment than coming into the appointment going, I can't remember that. Because you do. You end up with a headlight look and you forget the questions that you had. So you always bring that outline with you and then send it to the doctor prior to your appointment so they're prepared.
Great advice.
Yeah. There's also in the aging aspect of things, older patients tend to, especially if they've been in healthcare for a long time, they're in their 70s, they're in their 80s, octogenarians and septuagenarians, there's a $2 word for it. They really enjoy that time for building. They had a relationship, and they'll spend that time. They'll spend a lot of that 9 minutes in the front end trying to retouch base with that. They're used to the doctor asking them about how their kids are and where these things would work. And that's a natural part of what they're going to want to have happen in that. So I love that you set up ways that doesn't necessarily have to, then you don't have everybody breathing down their neck against that. If they've already sent that stuff up, what a great way to show you're in partnership and you value and you understand the time of that healthcare provider. But at the same time, you have real things that need to get done and walked through. I think that's a fantastic recommendation.
Well, a doctor is only as good as the information that they have.
Right.
Oh, so that's so true.
So if the doctor doesn't have all the information, they don't have the ability to figure out what's going on.
Right.
So, you know, that's why they run tests. That's why they do, you know, procedures. And so if they don't get that information from the patient of, you know, their symptoms, their concerns, their thoughts, they can't put the pieces of the puzzle together to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it's great. We are, you know, we are here today. Michelle, I really appreciate you starting to lay out some of this and how advocacy in general works for us as family members. One thing I'd really love to hear after we're going to take our last break of the session, and I'd like to come back in and kind of hit some of those maybe pitfalls to stick away from, things that we don't want to do that doesn't set an advocate up maybe for the best case scenario, or some of those things that are really important to do just in preparation for that when we come back. So everybody stay tight.
Hey guys, this is Tony at the Parent Projects Podcast. And if you are powered by coffee the way that I'm powered by coffee, I think you'll appreciate knowing a way that you can help the last, lost, and least of us that didn't have a great transition. You see, the Refuge Coffee Company is a social enterprise operated by Catholic Charities of Central and Northern Arizona, where they use this coffee and this business model to help homeless veterans at the Manor House Transitional Community get back on their feet. Help a veteran turn a handout into a hand up by giving them the opportunity to earn your business. Purchase coffee today at therefugeaz.com. That's therefugeaz.com. If you order 6 or more bags, shipping will be free. And if you tell them that Parent Project sent you, I'm going to send you a travel coffee mug. Thank you again, and let's get back to the show.
And this week on the Parent Projects Podcast, we have Michelle Riddle, founder of Complete Dignity, one of the earliest and first fully credentialed healthcare advocates, breaking down advocacy, and in particular, healthcare advocacy for a loved one. So if you've got a family member that seems to be overwhelmed by the healthcare system, you're looking for that way that you can really pitch in and help and become that multiplier of success for them, or to help them move along and hold on to that dignity, I think you need to continue to buckle up, especially for this third segment. Michelle, thanks again for joining us. My hope in this segment, as we start bringing the train into the station, is to get some practical advice around things that family members and family caregivers can be doing. Let's say they understand advocacy is important. They start kind of lining this up. I love the binder ideas and where those things come. Now, how do you get your bearings on this? How could a family member, when they just stumble on this, start to figure out maybe what's what so that they know what they're going to hand over to you, or if it's a situation that they even are armed to be able to go out themselves?
That's a great question. So advocacy is basically in three areas. One is managing care. The other is insurance, making sure that coverage is processed and covered the way that it's intended to. And then three, did the provider submit claims correctly? If you are uninsured, are you being balance billed? Are you being charged for services that weren't rendered? So there's three areas of advocacy that is crucial to help a patient grasp and navigate the industry. So going back to the insurance part, as the older population with Medicare and their supplement, then again, was the claim processed correctly? Was there a, is the CPT codes are correct? Was the claim actually submitted to insurance for coverage? I have seen this quite a bit where a patient goes in for a procedure that is a covered benefit at 100%. So there's no out-of-pocket expense. And the patient actually receives a bill that basically says you owe everything surrounding this procedure. And if you don't pay within 7 days, you're going to be sent to collections. So that's intimidation. And the older population, they typically don't, they don't want to, you know, rock the boat. They don't want to go to collections. And so they end up paying for services that were covered and are not their financial responsibility. So I think the tools for family members, again, is the red binder. So that has to do with managing care, making sure that you know the medications mom and dad are on, you know the providers that they're going to, and then talking about the symptoms and their concerns and their day-to-day activities, and then looking around in their home, making sure that their home is safe. Are they, is there food in the refrigerator? Is the food in the refrigerator old? Is, you know, do you see any signs of distress? Is there hoarding going on? So you just, you look at the environment completely. And then as far as insurance and billing goes, do you see a, a stack of medical bills? Do you see a stack of notifications from Medicare? Do you see, or from insurance companies? Do you see anything like that? Start sifting through them. I will tell you, a lot of times they're duplications, but there's a trail. So the first notification went out, and then the second, and then the third, and then the fourth. But you have to see where that trail is, because back to that trail, maybe that claim was not submitted properly. Maybe there is a wrong CPT code. Maybe they never received prior authorization. If a provider accepts insurance, they also accept the due diligence to make sure that they submit a claim properly. And if they don't submit a claim properly, if they don't get their prior authorization, that is not patient financial responsibility. But I will tell you that a provider will hold a patient accountable. And unfortunately, and I've seen this way too many times, where the patient has the information, hey, you didn't process my claim correctly. You didn't, or I'm sorry, you didn't submit my claim correctly. You didn't get prior authorization. And they'll come back with some sort of excuse that the insurance company didn't do this, this, and that. Therefore, it is your responsibility, but it's not your responsibility. So you have to look at where's the trail, what was the first breadcrumb that was positioned, what took place there, and as far as family members coming home, at Thanksgiving and during the holidays and so forth, knowing the environment that the family's in and seeing any clues that they're struggling and where are the areas that they're struggling in.
Yeah, that is highly, highly valuable assessment stuff. And that, it reminds me too, especially you started talking about looking at the environment or walking something around it, pull back. A lot of us were Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or Royal Rangers or something back in the past. And when they start talking to us about responding into first aid or a situation that might be rough, as you approach something, think about doing it without making yourself part of the problem. So keeping those eyes open, taking time, don't have a, be cautious maybe not to have a, an end state or a thought as to what you think everything that is. Try to have as open a mind as possible and let what you see in the evidence lead you to what your follow-up question should be. And then ask the questions. I love the idea of a red binder because it provides a place to put the answers to the questions. Right. Now, I would tell my family members when they got involved, have those conversations and then write down what you learn out of those conversations and see if there's change from how it gets answered at one time to another time. That's probably another big thing. You may ask the same question a few different times and get a slightly different answer based on the circumstances going around. And that's all just like, so what you said to the doctor, that all means something. There's actually information and knowledge.
Right.
And how answers change.
Yeah. Right. And I also think you have to keep in mind that this is a scary time and there's a lot of fears.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's two trains of thought, fight or flight. So you either are going to fight the situation, whether you're going to say everything's fine with me and, you know, you fight your family members and so forth, you know, get out of my business, or you're running for the door. So you have to be very gentle with the situation and lighthearted, because if you make too much of a big deal of it, they'll shut down. They won't tell you anything.
Yeah.
So if you make it lighthearted and keep your ears open, because you're going to get little clues, put those clues together, and it's not as, you're not being aggressive and you're not being confrontational, because nobody likes that. And the older population, they're afraid because this is, you know, uncharted territories. They've never been in the situation. They don't know how to navigate it. So they do need that advocate, regardless if it's a family member or a friend. They need somebody to advocate for them.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Boy, and what great advocacy and advocacy advice you give, Michelle, with complete dignity, not just in healthcare advocacy, but, you know, those points of being a great advocate in the first place. I really appreciate you sharing your time, your talents, and your treasures with us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for the team this week, and thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed the content, remember to subscribe and to share this episode on the app that you're using right now. Your reviews and your comments, they really help us expand our reach as well as our perspective. So if you have time, also drop us a note. Let us know how we're doing. For tips and tools to clarify your parent project, simplify communication with your stakeholders, and verify the professionals that you choose, you can find us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks again for trusting us. Until our next episode, behold and be held.
Thank you for listening to this Parent Projects podcast production. To access our show notes, resources, or forums, join us on your favorite social media platform or go to parentprojects.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by Family Media and Technology Group Incorporated and Parent Projects LLC. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcast.